are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, July 6, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks. I'm wearing a slightly different version of my soft-collared shirt. This one's actually a soft-collared button-down shirt. And Zumas and Chaps. On the program today, Ben Dixon from the Benjamin Dixon Show will join us. And then, since we've just got just too much news to deal with, maybe we can get him to give us a movie recommendation. But Virgil Texas, I don't think that's his real name, will be joining us in studio. Meanwhile, Scott Pruitt finally has his come to Jesus moment. We won't have him and his wife to kick around anymore. Also, the Trump administration rescinds affirmative action guidance to universities across the country. And someone checked the GOP bylaws for a wrestling and sexual harassment requirement. As the fourth wrestler, college wrestler from Ohio, claims Jim Jordan knew. And ladies and gentlemen, we introduce to you the perfect Republican policy in action. The privatized tax collection agency, tasked with collecting back taxes, is only harassing the poor. And are you ready for this? Losing money. IRS earns $4 for every one this Republican privatized debacle losing money. Meanwhile, the military is screwing over immigrants as we truly have become the last refuge for refugees. And with Pruitt out, the EPA gets coal lobbyists and a report that the EPA is blocking a warning on cancer-causing formaldehyde inhalation. Because why not? Federal judge strikes down Medicaid work requirements in Kentucky. And Chuck Schumer giving lessons on how not to win.
Running a clinic.
Lastly, a Republican-less California explodes, economy explodes, while a Republican full Kansas and Oklahoma are S-hole states, as I think we refer to them now. All that and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday. And, of course, Independence Day week, as we call it around here.
Very strange having it in the middle of the week.
So strange. So strange. And it's emptied out. Have you noticed that? I went to go do, what do you call it? Ari Melber's show last night. Usually it takes me like an hour and 15 minutes during that time because it's like rush hour. I got there in 35 minutes. Had nothing to do. I wanted to point out a couple of things. Folks, if you are one of our listeners who lives in Los Angeles, I want to draw your attention to a benefit for Kids in Need of Defense. It's this organization, Kind, which supports the children who have been sequestered, essentially, under the Trump regime's program of essentially kidnapping kids. You can get more information at supportkind.org, but there is a night of comedy and a silent auction in at a place called Salazar. It's on Fletcher Drive in L.A. I think that's like near Silver Lake area. Am I right? Comedians. Brett Gelman will be there. It's one of Brendan's favorite comedians.
He does good voices.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
The guy's terrible. He's a total loser.
Maybe.
Very, very weak. Not talented.
We'll see.
Sad.
And Dan Mintz, who I know, he's the voice of Tina on Bob's Burgers. And then there's a couple other comedians, Emily Heller, Alice Wetterlin, Solomon Giorgio, Johnny Pemberton. That sounds like a fake name. Marcelo Argiello. Drinks and snacks are free there. You can go to kindnight.eventbrite.com. It's at Salazar on July 9th. So check it out. It's just 3 days away. Go there. It's a great cause. And then you get a whole night of comedy on top of it. Also, I want to read this email from 10 Foot Man. Hi, everyone at MR. I made a decision to join so I would not feel that guilt in the back of my mind. I am thinking about Pinocchio, the Disney film. I am just a lobster, all jacked up on endorphins, I guess. Without going into too much detail, let's just say that since I'm on SDI and a little damaged in the spine area, money is tight. I'm also taking care of my 88-year-old mother. But damn it, I love your show and have followed Sam since Air America days. Rediscovered the podcast through H. John Benjamin. I don't know how that happened. Of whom I am a huge fan. All kinds of synchronicity here. Oh, that's young, isn't it? That's Jay Peterson territory again. Sorry. I am totally panicked, as everyone, about the current state of politics, and I enjoy Sam's level head, quite the contrast to other podcasts that will go unnamed, parentheses, Jimmy Dore. And so monetary contribution is mandatory in this case. What I would love to is to have that show far signify I am truly part of the team. Well, 10 Foot Man, this is for you. I had a little spittle in the front end of that. Let me just say this. I appreciate your joining. If folks have the means, by all means, join themajorityreport.com. But if you don't have the means, if you're in a situation like 10 Foot Man, please. Send us an email. We're happy to help you out, and if you want the extra content, but I don't want anybody to put themselves into any type of financial stress. So thank you. I really appreciate the kind note and the support. But please, if you want some of the fun half, and you are in a period of financial stress, don't hesitate to email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Have a little patience, because sometimes takes a while for us to get there, but we will get there. Meanwhile, I want to get to this. Now, look, we're going to read Scott Pruitt's resignation letter, but I think we're going to probably wait until Virgil gets here. I will do that a little bit later. But as you know, Scott Pruitt resigned yesterday. And I am not unconvinced that woman, the mom coming up to him in the lunchroom, did not sort of add to this. Now, with that said, the guy's under literally 12 federal investigations from different IGs and whatnot. There is an IG report coming out which may involve, I've heard, possibly criminal activity. Who knows? Maybe that wanted to get while the getting was good. I suspect it was not his decision to leave, because this has been an opportunity for him to get as much hand lotion as he can get his hands on.
Chick-fil-A's.
Chick-fil-A opportunities. I mean, they abound. But understand, there's two things you should understand about this. The calls for him to resign were about as bipartisan as anything that's going to happen, that's happened in the past couple of years or going forward. The other is, it's a mystery as to why he was there for that long. I'm quite convinced it was because of Trump's relationship with Harold Hamm, but that's another story for another day. Here is how Fox covered this. They immediately, they didn't even lead with his resignation. They led with how much of a victim the interim EPA chief, Andrew Wheeler, is, who was a former coal lobbyist and like a proud climate denier. They led. The story was not that Pruitt had resigned in shame, but that Andrew Wheeler was already being maligned as a former coal lobbyist, despite the fact that he was, in fact, simply a former coal lobbyist.
New EPA chief Andrew Wheeler hasn't been on the job for 24 hours and is already being attacked. The left going after Wheeler's ties to the coal industry after celebrating Scott Pruitt's resignation. Massachusetts Democratic Senator Ed Markey tweeting, quote, about damn time. With Pruitt out and Andrew Wheeler at the helm, the EPA administrator will no longer be Big Oil's right-hand man. It'll be King Coal's best lobbyist.
Oh, God, Markey. So brutal.
These liberals, they don't understand. The left is just attacking the new HHS secretary, Chief Joe Camel, and the Marlboro man.
They should test Markey for rabies.
He's out of control, that guy.
He's rabid.
Oh, my God. The
they
way
called
that
him
he...
Rabid Markey. Rabid Markey.
Rabid Markey.
Rabid Markey.
So crazy. Shouldn't be Ed Markey. It should be...
Rabid.
Rabid Markey.
It should be Rabid Markey. That's why I call him Rabid, because it's Rabid Markey. Yeah, I talked to somebody who worked around the Senate once, and I was like, who are the most just normal people there? And he was like, Ed Markey. Literally, right. That was like his pick. He's like, yeah, he's a pretty normal guy.
Well, he's rabid now. Used to be normal, now he's rabid. Fox is amazing. And just as a side note, Bill Shine, the vice president of the sexual harassment factory that was being run at Fox News for decades, has been out of work and now hired as the deputy chief of staff for communications in the White House. His job is to both make sure that Donald Trump never hears about the lawsuits that are being filed against him for all the sexual harassment he committed, and also to make sure that any message that Sean Hannity has for President Trump hits his desk before any other assessment by any other agency or department head in the country. So there it is. Sean Hannity, the second most powerful man in the country. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, Ben Dixon.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program the proprietor and principal of the Benjamin Dixon Show, available on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, anywhere you get podcasts, folks. Ben Dixon, welcome to the program, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam. Good to be back.
Let's just briefly touch on Scott Pruitt. I don't know how the guy lasted this long. I mean, honestly, I think there's a story behind that. And I think it has to do with Harold Hamm, who's a friend of Trump's and was like a co-chair of this guy's campaign as attorney general in Oklahoma. But he's gone. Does it really? I mean, have we gone from the fire into the frying pan into the fire, or just basically from the fire to the fire?
It remains to be seen, but I think it can't really. Do you think it could get worse than what Scott Pruitt was already doing in terms of this actual position at the EPA?
I don't think so. I mean, they are withholding and you know, for all we know, that maybe it's Wheeler has been doing most of this anyways, right? He's the number two there. He's the guy who knows sort of the machinations of the organization. They are literally suppressing a report that shows that inhaling formaldehyde gives you cancer. How much more horrific can you be?
So that's the question, right? I honestly don't know, because Scott Pruitt was, I mean, in addition to being a massive grifter, you know, all of the things that he was doing that was, you know, scamming the American people blatantly. I mean, what he was actually doing in his position as the head over at the EPA was just atrocious. And the fact that Pruitt's replacement, Wheeler, was a part of that the entire time. I'm assuming, and I hate to make assumptions, and I'm afraid to say this, but I think it's going to be pretty much par for the course. We're just going to go from the fryer to the fryer. I genuinely hope it can't get a lot worse than what Scott Pruitt was already doing.
I mean, and the thing that I mean, it sort of fascinates me is that there was clearly a concerted effort to get all this stuff that Scott Pruitt was up to out, right, in the open, right? Mm-hmm. Every day you show up and there's another story about this. And I wonder where that was coming from on some level, and if people just felt like that he was just not competent in dismantling the EPA, and maybe they felt that Wheeler was. Because I mean, this is when we talk about this this formaldehyde thing, just as an example.
Right.
He apparently did this when he was the staff director. He also, I should say, suppressed another version of the assessment of formaldehyde back in 2004 when he was working for Jim Inhofe on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. So, I mean, some of the worst stuff that's coming out of there could already be a project of this guy, Andrew Wheeler.
Right.
Just another example of careful what you wish for. Because there seems to be like a bottomless pit of horrible human beings who can fulfill some position in this administration.
Yeah, that was going to be my next point, Sam, that, you know, in any of these positions, if, you know, even with Trump himself, we still have Pence. There's like a long list of people on the bench who are more than happy to go even further or at a minimum carry out what the administration wants done. So, you know, this is not a victory per se. It's just, we got rid of one. It's like whack-a-mole, right? You ever play the game,
right?
You get rid of one, and they're always going to keep popping up. So we just have to weather the storm through the rest of this this administration.
All right. There's not a lot more to talk about. This is another, you know, I guess they've lost five cabinet personnel at this point, at least. I imagine there'll be more. I mean, God knows what's going to happen this summer.
Well, One other detail, and I'm sure that you pointed this out, but I just, you know, it's amazing to me the level of scandal that is no longer a scandal. Yeah. You could pick any number of the things that Scott Pruitt was accused of or just outright guilty of, and it would have been a significant scandal in any other administration. And not to point out a hypocrisy between conservatives and Democrats, Republicans and Democrats, because something like this would have brought someone down in the Bush administration. So we're just in this strange land where this bottomless pit, as you described it, where nothing seems to stick.
I mean, what is that just simply a function that Donald Trump has managed to lower the bar? I mean, he's made what was it that there was some report the other day that Trump Inc. has made $500 million since they've been in office or something.
Yeah.
And that's just what we know of.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, that's clearly it. Trump's shamelessness in and of itself is like his own superpower. The real question is how many people can actually ride his coattails of shamelessness, right? How many people can get away with this? And even Scott Pruitt, I think it's fascinating that he's actually stepping down at this point, at least, you know, in his resignation letter, because of the relentless attacks on him and his family, you know, whatever, you know. But, you know, could it have been an actual scandal that was coming down the pipeline that he couldn't survive? I don't know, because he survived so much. And I do agree with you. It's 100% a function of Trump's shamelessness and his ability to not have anything stick to him.
Well, let's turn to, like I say, let's turn a little bit to what's going on the immigration front for a moment. Or actually, you know what? Before we get there, this all seems to be part of a whole on some level, like to the extent that Donald Trump has any type of agenda. It's just it seems to me to really make sure his base understands that they are finally doing away with all the privilege that anybody who's not white gets in this country. Essentially is what it comes down to. And, you know, whether it's the affirmative action guidance rescindment you know, what's going on with immigration. But outline for us what this affirmative action thing actually means. I mean, my sense is it's not going to have huge impact, but it is just another sort of like signifier.
Yeah, so exactly. So, you know, I don't really talk about affirmative action a lot because of problems that I see with the system, that it really isn't beneficial to people of color who are poor or just poor people in general. It's really a system set up and designed by its nature almost to benefit upper middle class wealthy people who are fighting for positions at the top tier schools across the country. We're really talking about those schools. We're not talking about the schools that I went to, right? We're talking about Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford. And so what Donald Trump has done in his administration, Jeff Sessions and Betsy DeVos, they have rescinded the instructions from the Obama administration. There were a set of 24 rules that they are not rules, but actually just kind of a guideline that the Obama administration issued to help universities be inclusive in terms of race without violating the law. And Donald Trump has rescinded those instructions. And I agree with you. It's really just a signifier to his audience to say, hey, we're going to, you know, we're on your side here. But the problem really comes in with the cases that are lined up in the pipeline for the Supreme Court. And now that Donald Trump has another Supreme Court pick coming, there's potentially a problem because Kennedy was one of the deciding votes against Abigail Fisher back in 2016. And he upheld race-based affirmative action in that case, particularly because Abigail Fisher was unqualified. She wasn't that outstanding of a student for the case to even come that far. But now that Donald Trump has a pick, and he is signifying to his support base that he's all about getting rid of any privilege that a person of color or a non-white person would have in this country, that's where the real problem comes, particularly with the gentleman by the name of Edward Blum, who is pushing cases right now. He's soliciting Asian American students who can make the case that they were discriminated against racially based on their race.
And the case that they would make is that their spots that they should have won went to a less qualified member of another minority community.
Right. And that the interesting thing about it, there's a wonderful article in NBC News. Actually, they have a thought piece section. And the author was describing this situation as kind of a false choice, where it's not really that Asian American students are taking are losing spots to black people, per se, or Latinos. If we really had a truly merit based system, these Asian American students would actually be taking spots away from white students. And so this case that's being presented to the Supreme Court is actually going to affect minorities, but the real victims of this are the people who would be the target of a decision to reverse affirmative action would be white students. So that's the irony of this entire case.
So in the event that are you suggesting that in the event that the plaintiffs prevail, it's going to basically Asian students are going to edge out white students or no?
Well, I mean, in theory, that should be the case. And this is what the author, I'll pull up her name before long. But what she pointed out is that there are enough systemic advantages for white guys, for particularly white men, even over white women, that even in a system that revokes affirmative action and that we think is meritocratic, in actuality, there are enough advantages because for white men that they'll overcome that. Anyway.
There's no like legacy students.
Exactly.
If your parents went, if your parents have given money, you play any number of sports, I guess, that may have
particularly sports at Ivy League schools like,
right.
Badminton or whatever, black kids don't excel in more. So, in these top tier schools, that is an advantage that really gives white men an advantage over and above the meritocratic advantages of Asian Americans.
It's interesting because and people should know that basically the state of the law now in terms of affirmative action is that I think more or less that schools are allowed to do it if they have exhausted any means, all means in which to try and develop a diverse student body, because there is an understanding that there are educational merits and benefits to having different
Absolutely.
Types of folks around. And it's interesting. I don't know if you've ever read Rick Kahlenberg. He has written about the best way to address this. And to some extent, it's what you talked about. The best way to address both racial diversity, but also to maintain some genuine diversity from an economic standpoint is to set up basically affirmative action based upon economic status.
Yeah.
I think he wrote this piece a while back. Maybe it was a book. I can't recall now. But it's an interesting argument that you will get. And I think he's done this in terms of like high schools and in Texas and others. You will get a greater racial diversity if you go by economics.
Right.
And you'll get a more genuine, socioeconomic diverse student body. But let's
Absolutely.
Move to the other shoe, I guess, and maybe there's maybe a couple other prongs to this agenda. But we have now a denaturalization committee. We have the military apparently has been quietly rescinding the contracts that they signed with immigrants who were looking to become citizens by serving in the military, which is just, just astonishing. And I don't mean to privilege, military service over something else, but you would just think from like a practical standpoint, but no. we are now... We have traditionally been the leader in taking in refugees. resettlement. In 2017, the number of refugees resettled by the U.S. fell below the rest of the world's total for the first time on record. The Trump administration just this week, I think, has deemed it, is trying to make it more difficult for refugees to be allowed to work in this country. I mean, it's an all-out assault. I mean, at the very least, to the extent that that Trump came in with an agenda and is carrying out, this is it.
Right, right. You know, with even with the victory on the travel ban, the quote-unquote travel ban that's actually a Muslim ban, this is, you know, behind the scenes, this is obviously the bidding and the doing of Stephen Miller. I believe he's driving this incessantly. He has to see this accomplished. And Donald Trump is fine with acquiescing to him, or, you know, maybe this is just something he wants. But I really believe that this is being driven by Stephen Miller more than anything else. And now it is pushing where, you know, people who have been become naturalized citizens, they've been naturalized citizens for years, you know, they are now at risk. And, you know, to not necessarily get into the details and the minutiae, but this opens up the opportunity for someone with errors, minor errors in their process, in their paperwork. Or, you know, in some cases, there were intentional examples of fraud, right? There, you know, since 1990, there have been 300 cases of people being denaturalized because of fraud. So there is a precedent of fraud, but now we're talking about 2,500 cases that the this task force is looking at right now. So 300 over the last 20 years. And at this moment, we're looking at 2,500. So that escalation shows you that this is an intensification coming from Donald Trump and Stephen Miller. But, you know, it's really to cast fear, to make people fear the entire idea of coming to America as an immigrant in any form, in any fashion. And I think that is really, that's really what's driving this. Behind it, of course, is the fear of the browning of America. That's something that's not, you know, new to Donald Trump. It's something that, you know, conservative Americans, particularly over the last 30, 40 years, have been fearing America
this
becoming
was Pat know, Buchanan's, you know, like yep. a brand, essentially.
Exactly. Exactly. And so this is part and parcel of that type of thinking. And so, I mean, here we are now, even, you know, the military story I just read last night or this morning, where now people who have signed up and signed these contracts, like you stated, they are now in a position where they can no longer take advantage of promises that were made to them. So this is Donald Trump's legacy, and this is what he wants. And they will be where we look at it, Sam, and we see that it is shameful. This is something that he's going to be proud of.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He obviously thinks this is going to this is to his electoral benefit, right? I mean, that's absolutely basically what's going on here. And we should say, let me just say this other thing about the denaturalization. Those 300, more than likely, I don't know if all of them, but the vast majority of them are caught up in some other legal situation, right? They got caught up in our criminal justice system, and this became this. You know, it's like one of those things, like where, you know, they won't stop you for a seatbelt violation, but if they stop you because you're speeding, or you've taken an illegal right turn, then you get the seatbelt violation on top of it. This is one of those things. The idea that we now have a commission that is actually going out and examining each of these applications for people who have been in this country for, in some instances, decades, for like, oh, you said that you were born in August, and right here you wrote July, or you know, you wrote the number, you know, the number 7 instead of the number 8. We're going to kick you out. I don't know why it's almost like there's nothing else. Once you realize the agenda is to terrorize the community of immigrants, everything else makes sense. And really, you know, how do you expand on it?
You know, it, you think about this, the story that came out last night out of a deposition where a child who was reunited with her mother hadn't been bathed in 85 days. Once you realize that's what we're doing, everything else shouldn't be a surprise. But, you know, I guess if we are not surprised, then we're less likely to do something about it. So we just have to keep this in front of the people as often as we can.
Totally fucked up. Yeah. Excuse my French. And all right. So I want to just talk about this because you got sent this thing and a clip of a conversation we had here. Now, Jamie's not here today. So
Sam, real quick, just for your listeners, because I want to give the author credit back on the affirmative action story. Her right. name was Marie Lee, and she wrote for NBC. I think it's an article that is worthwhile explaining why Asian Americans need to be wary of conservatives using them against affirmative action. So I just want to make sure I put that out there.
All right. Marie Lee. We'll check that out. All right. So you sent me this clip, and it is zero sum has now become my catchphrase on this program. And Jamie is not here, but you want to discuss, and let's touch on this because it is everything we're seeing from the Trump administration, right, is oriented towards Fox. And Fox News is oriented towards, you know, the major policy. There's really two sets of policies that he's carried through, right? There was one legislative victory for the Republicans that has cut taxes on rich people.
Right.
The two major ones that he's done and the trade stuff is not quite there is to just simply levy taxes on things. And they're talking about like some type of $30 billion bailout for farmers because they're about to get crunched. There is no evidence that the tariffs are going to help anybody economically, at least not of his base. The immigration stuff, there's also no evidence that that's going to help anybody, but he's quite convinced it's going to help in terms of the election. And my contention has been, as I discuss in this clip, that not for all the Trump voters, but, you know, remember, 95% of these people voted for Mitt Romney, that what we're dealing with on some level is a loss of social status that is reflected in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
You turn on the TV. It used to be when I was a kid, every time I would turn on the TV, some iteration of me was the lead character on every right. single program. And now that's not the case. And well, here is the brief. Here's a minute long clip from, I guess it was a couple weeks ago. This comes from, I get it. I totally get it. I think at the heart of it, frankly, it is people feeling like they are losing their status in society. And guess what? They are. They are. This is a zero-sum game. If you have had an inordinate amount of status as a function of something that has nothing to do with you, but has to do with the subjugation of other people who might be competing against you, broadly speaking, it's not true for every single individual, but broadly speaking, you're going to lose your status when they start getting more more opportunity and more voice in society. That's just the reality of it.
Well, it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game, though. Like, I think that's what
when it comes to social status,
bit,
it has to be.
I mean, status is so intimately tied to economics that, like,
it's not just
the goal
that.
Of a lot of leftist thought right now is how do we get people to become left populists?
I get that. But the fact of the matter is that every bit of our culture was centered around one specific group of people. And that was not just an economic calculation. It just so happened that those people had the power. So they're going to lose that status. There's just no denying it. It is a zero sum game.
But why do people feel the need to have a special status in the first place?
Because human beings, I think, like to feel that they are special. And human beings don't like to lose what they have.
You do have to be careful.
Hold on. So, all right. So, Ben, you're special. I mean, your thoughts on this? I mean, because I think, like, this is not to deny the problems that we have in terms of inequality, of just financial stress that the vast majority of people are under. But, you know, losing your social status in the culture is a real thing. And right. it's just, you right. know, some people are going to react poorly to it.
Yeah. So you and I, we have mutual fans, obviously. And one of our mutual fans sent this to me a couple weeks back. I didn't get a chance to listen to it until this morning when I told my followers that I was coming on your show. He wanted to make sure I talked to you about it. And I listened to the entire 30 minutes. It's a great segment. But I found myself agreeing with you more than anyone else. And the reason he sent it to me is because I have this saying, and I say it from the side of marginalized people, that liberation is not a zero-sum game, right? So for Black people and people of Latino people, it's not, we're not in competition for our liberation, because there's divisions in the Black community that I have to speak on all the time, where you have Black nationalists who think it is foolish for us to stand in solidarity with immigrants, even though there are such things as Black immigrants. But I digress. So I always have to say this, it's cyclical, particularly with the Trump administration. Anytime he attacks immigrants, we come to their defense because we stand in solidarity. And I have to remind the Black nationalist crowd that liberation is not a zero sum game. However, social status is more of a zero sum game. And the thing that I felt was missing in the conversation that you all had that I listened to this morning from back in May was that, you know, there's economic status, but there is social status. There's the culture wars. And for people who are more willing to latch on to the significance of the culture war of their perceived social status than their own economic benefit, they are willing to see, you know, to buy into the Jordan Petersons of the world, to buy into anyone who's going to kind of assuage that anguish that they are losing their place in society. But the reality of it is that we are coming after the white male Christian power structure in this country. And that's not my definition. That is the definition, but Bill O'Reilly popularized it many years ago. It is a white male Christian power structure, and we're seeking to tear that down. So there are people who economically benefit from it, definitely, and they are going to be hurt because they're being taken out of their position of power. But more than likely, there are so many more white people who don't benefit from that power structure. And the real question is, are they willing to cede the fight, the culture war fight, in order to find some economic solidarity that Marie and Mike were talking about in rebuttal
Jamie,
to you?
Right. But
Jamie, I'm sorry, I'm thinking about the writer. Jamie and Mike were using as a rebuttal. Will they actually relinquish that fight? And I don't know that they will. I think they actually find some type of utility out of the culture wars, even though economically this white male Christian power structure is damaging to them as well.
I mean, look, we see it all the time. We don't see it as much anymore. There's still maybe CBS or something occasionally, like the older people networks. But that concept of, like, you know, of the honeymooners, right? Well, it's like, okay, yeah, he's a bus driver and they're living in it, but he's the king of his castle, right? That's what it comes down to. It doesn't matter if my castle isn't as nice as that guy's castle, as long as I'm the king of this castle. And that's what it was. I mean, it was like when they changed the laws so that my mom could actually get a credit card in her own name, you know, which happened while she was an adult. You know, that meant that my dad did not have the control over her that he wanted.
Yeah, I think.
I'm not saying specifically that's the case, although probably was. But that, I mean, that it's a zero sum game. And in that instance, right, like liberation is not a zero sum, but it is for the oppressor.
Yes, exactly. Because we are literally coming after the power structure that benefits white Christian men. We are. And the real question underneath it is, if you're going to look at it from a class critique and, you know, actual tangible material benefit, I mean, there are so many working class white people who do not benefit from this power structure. And that's the solidarity that we need to find. But instead, it's almost like a substitution or a counterfeiting, you know, in poker, if your hand is counterfeited. It's almost like a counterfeit. They look at the culture war as a counterfeit example of their real status in society, when in reality, they're getting screwed by the system just as much as anyone else, economically speaking.
If
they don't think about that, if they dismiss that and they really cling to the fact that their relative power to it with regards to women, you know, that's the honeymooner effect. It's relative power, right? In your household, you are the king of the hill.
Yeah.
If that's more important to them, then we'll never tear down the system that's oppressing them as well, economically speaking.
Yes. And I will have to say, though, I don't think it's real. This is not just vapor. I mean, it's a nice feeling to watch every commercial and be like, hey, man, I'm in the middle of this. Like this, like everything is validating the experience of me and everybody else just being a bit player in my life. Like when I'm watching TV, right? Like it's me, the white guy in the middle, and everybody else is just like
supporting cast.
It's supporting cast, and it's nice to walk through life thinking like,
you know,
this is all about me, and you're just here because you're all part of my dream, essentially. And that's what television's telling me. And that's what the commercials are telling me.
Yep.
Like, you know, and it's not just that. It's also like, you know, when I go into, you know, the clothing store, all the mannequins look like me. And I mean, like wherever it is, it's just, that's not nothing. Right. And
well,
the idea that like at home, like I can say, sweetheart, get me a beer and I'm going to sit on the couch and you finish the dishes. Thank you for serving me. I mean, it's, you know, it's real. It's a real thing that.
I'm sorry.
No,
that's
basically it. No,
okay. No, I thought I heard another voice there. So I could, you know, co-sign. I can't co-sign the honey, go get me a beer thing because that doesn't work in my household dynamic.
Well, I'm not saying that it's actually worked in mine either.
No,
I mean, I'm separated.
I had to be sure to put that on the air because in case my wife is listening.
I understand.
But here's the difference. Like, and I agree with you. It's the difference between me watching The Walking Dead and seeing all the black people killed on a regular basis and it's centered around a white guy. I have to pretend that I'm the hero of the story, even though I'm not white.
Right.
And then watching Black Panther, right? There's like a night and day difference between the two experiences. And I guess that has some value. But, you know, to me, you know, we would like to think people are rational thinkers. And I think that's the problem, that people aren't as rational as we hope they are, because you would think that it would be more important for us to focus on a material existence and our economics. But you know, reality around us says otherwise.
Here's the last question, though. Is it a question of these folks making a conscious choice that I want to make sure that I'm king of my castle, however I define that, over some measure of solidarity on an economic front? Or is it that they do not believe that there is really any room to change that economic front, and therefore I'm going to stay king of the castle here?
I would offer you a third a possibility with the Charlie Kirks of the world, the people who are pushing pushing an entire new front of support for capitalism and attack against any deviation from what we have right now. I think they firmly believe that this system is preferable to any other system. So now not only are we fighting against the king of the hill mentality, but we're also fighting against propaganda, capitalistic propaganda that is shoring up support for a system that is obviously devastating communities across all racial backgrounds.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, that system, you know, may very well also be the one that keeps them as the king of the castle. But
fair enough, true. Yeah,
Benjamin Dixon Show, available on every podcast platform ever developed and in perpetuity, future ones as well. Thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Always a pleasure.
Bye bye. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to reset our studio, move walls around, and furniture around. And
it's like it? It's like when they put the roof on at a baseball game when it starts to rain.
That's right. We're putting the dome up. And joining us in studio, Virgil, Texas, of this Chapo Trap House. We'll be right back.
Nest up in the autumn branches, built from nothing but high hopes and thin air. We collected up some baby blasted mothers. They took their chances, and for a while they lived quite happily up there. It came from New York City, man, but he couldn't take the pace, and thought it was like a dog-eat-dog world. And he went to San Francisco, spent a year in outer space with a sweet little San Franciscan girl. I can hear my mother wailing and a whole lot of scraping of chairs. I don't know what it is, but there's definitely something going on upstairs. He had to get out of there, and San Francisco, well, I don't know. And then to L.A., where he spent about a day. He thought even the pale sky stars were smart enough to keep well away from L.A. Meanwhile, Larry made up names for the ladies, like Miss Boo and Miss Quick. He stockpiled weapons and took pot shots in the air. He
we're going over some video footage and get some of that. Folks, well, welcome back to the program. This is the Majority Report. And joining us on set, Michael has reseated himself. But sitting next to Michael is Virgil, Texas. He is one of the Chapo Trap House. What do you call it? Crew? How do you call it?
Crew fam.
The crew fam. And you guys, let's just start with this before we get into any of the news out there. You guys have a book that has come out. Is it released
funny
yet?
You should mention that. I have a copy of it right here.
How did that
it's
happen?
It's called The Chapo Guide to Revolution, A Manifesto Against Logic, Facts, and Reason. Will be released August 21st. It is available for pre-order right now at all major book retailers.
And so wait a second. So this is, you're actually arguing against, what was it? Logic,
Facts, and Reason. Yeah.
Logic, Facts, and Reason. Yeah. So what is the elevator pitch argument against logic, facts, and reason?
Well, they're the three bugbears of modern civilization that are holding us back from what we like to call Chapo Year Zero.
Oh,
the
really?
Fulfillment of our body of thought.
And
it's like a Khmer Rouge thing.
Yeah, this is, I mean...
No, we came up with that term.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
And what, I mean, give us a sense of what will happen in, like, year 0.1, let's say. I mean, somewhere around, like, February to March of year zero, what happens?
Well, I can read you a little bit from the political program.
All right, that would be good.
One, a 3-day work week, 4-hour work day. Healthcare, childcare, education, housing, food, free and paid for by turning all existing billionaires into thousandaires or Soylent. The use of logic, facts, and reason outlawed. Feelings become fiat currency. The police are replaced by robot police of some kind. Mm. Everyone gets a dog. All drugs are legalized and also become safe, healthy, non-addictive. Every person involved in creating, promoting, and planning the Iraq War is pushed into a volcano. And control of all media, newspapers, journalism, etc. is turned over to a mysterious Big Brother-style figure known only as the Beer Nerd.
Oh, the Beer Nerd. And this all happens on... Does it happen on day one, or is it like the first quarter
Unless we sleep in.
Right, I see. So it's possible for it to take place. I mean, that sounds pretty good. I like that 3-day work week.
In addition to outlining our vision of the future, the book contains a lot of apt criticism of our current situation, explanations of the media, culture, work, and technology, and of course liberals and conservatives and what's wrong with both of them. I was talking to my colleague Matt Chrisman last night, and I said, you know, I don't really know how to encapsulate this book because it's very sprawling, despite how, you know, short it is. And he said, it's a manual for making sense of the world. And wow. I said, no, Dianetics is a manual for making sense of the world. This is a funny, sharp book. And I recommend it heartily to anyone
listening. It's sort of like a
listening.
Hybrid of like Khmer Rouge and Dianetics.
Yeah, you could put it that way.
All right.
And Kathy and the comic strip Kathy.
And there is an opportunity to sort of, I guess, redistribute the money as well, right? As in Dianetics, L. Ron Hubbard. Do you get, like, are there status markers that you get? Like, what is it in Dianetics? Like, will you become, like, a Phalon or something like that? Or
you get clear.
You get clear.
You go up ranks. It's like an RPG. You level up to like OT7, right? Is that what you're thinking?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Isn't clear the highest state? I think.
You're
good to go.
I'm not totally familiar, but I'm saying, is there a way to do that? Is it just you become a gray wolf? And
I would have to say that would be becoming a gray wolf is OT1,
right?
And buying the book is OT2,
right? And then what's OT3?
That's buying two copies of the book.
Just so on.
There's a progression.
So that's basically the way you get clear is you buy like a dozen books, essentially.
Yeah.
Give them out as gifts to people. And all right. Well, we'll talk a little bit about those problems and critiques of our modern day. But you said you had an anecdote about you.
I did. It's actually, it begins with an apology. I'm sorry, because when I heard your name, I got really mad. I said, Sam Cedar, oh, that asshole? Why would I go on his program? And I said, you know, that, and everyone's like, what are you talking about? I said, that fucking guy, he's online and always preaching about civility and all this bullshit. The guy who said when Don Jr. got divorced, like, oh, this is really sad. We should feel bad for him. Or said that about Scaramucci and his wife leaving him. And then someone had to explain to me, no, you're thinking of Sam Stein.
Oh, my God. That, I
Sam
will tell
Stein
you,
said all of that?
I will tell you that 10% of the time that I get, 20% of the time I get recognized, it is as Sam Stein.
I thought it was John
I'm
Oliver.
Sorry. That's I'm no, sorry for Sam contributing Stein. To that.
A
that's,
lot of, like, elderly make assumptions, but yes. Jewish women will say, like, oh my God, Sam, I watch you on MSNBC all the time.
I agree. I agree. It was very sad
sweetheart,
that they got divorced.
Meet Sam Stein. And I'm like, it's, yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's all right.
There are too many Sams, I would have to say, in the media.
There's a lot. Is there really?
Yeah, there's my friend Sam Knight and Sam Sachs, who I assume met at a Sam
That's
convention,
true.
And they
That's
have
true.
Their own show now.
And then there's a lot of bad Sams. There's, you know, there's Harris, there's Stein.
I don't think Stein is that bad, to be honest with you. I mean, I you know, those type of platitudes, I think, you know, I'm not as...
Right, so Harris is bad Sam, Stein is platitude Sam,
right?
You're zero sum Sam.
I'm zero
and
sum.
And then there's the pod Sams. Okay.
The right. Pod Sam's America.
District
and
Sam.
Then, of course, there's also the new, you missed this, the new PAC, right? The Serve America,
Serve America
movement.
PAC. There's a Sam PAC.
Yeah.
Staffed by Sams.
Yeah. It's all...
too many Sams, I'm
it's
telling
It's all Wall Street money, and we're going to serve America. I don't know. What is your thoughts? Did you hear any of that conversation at the end there with Ben Dixon about this notion of social status?
No, oh. I didn't. I had to use the bathroom.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Well, the argument, I'll bounce off if this strikes a chord at all. But the idea that we, part of what drives Trump voters, and by Trump voters, I mean Republicans, because is this notion of not just, and economic security insecurity may enhance this feeling, but there is a very real, and it's been going on for years, and I think the rate in which this is happening is increasing, a very real loss of social status, of cultural significance, that, you know, white guys are suffering.
Yeah.
And I'm not making apologies for them. You deal with it. But it's real, and people should understand that that is, it's important to recognize that it's real.
I mean, no, I agree with that. And in our discussion of the conservative mindset in the book, The Chapo Guide to Revolution, A Manifesto Against Logic, Facts, and Reason, now available for pre-order at
you
all major...
You should stand that up. Don't put it down. Just leave it there.
All major book retailers, including Powell's, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. In our discussion of it, yeah, I mean, we track that in terms of... One, the deteriorating or rather stagnating economic conditions for this, you know, the white middle class in America, and as well the way that these individuals are preyed upon electorally, because, you know, you have that Thomas Frank argument, what's the matter with Kansas, right? That these poor whites are being suckered by demagogues into voting against their economic interests. So liberals look at that and think, oh, you're just being bamboozled. Maybe if we get you the facts or something, you'll change your mind. And what we maintain is, no, they're not actually being suckered. I mean, don't get me wrong. They are voting against their class interests, to be sure. But there's no such thing as class politics anymore in this country, because that's been eviscerated systematically over the past several decades. What they're voting for is cultural resentment. And with Trump, they're getting it. They're, right. These Republican demagogues, while, you know, shuttering their schools and privatizing their water and destroying their unions, are still giving them what they fundamentally crave, which is triggering the libs.
Right. And also pushing back against, you know, the political correctness is simply the sort of the example of this. It's, I'm no longer able to say nice gams to
But now it's real policy, right? Because of the way they're trying to design their electorate with voter suppression and immigration policies. But I just think, like, I still think if you look at the numbers, it's mostly, it is still primarily relatively affluent white people. It's people who make, I think the median average of a Trump voter was $70,000 a year. And these are like these suburban, more middle to upper class white people. So I think, you know, usually when we're talking about this working class, and I'm not hugely persuaded by the need to slice and dice the working class in some ways electorally. But a lot of working class white people and poor white people, like a lot of poor people, didn't vote and don't engage generally. So I think it's true what you're talking about, the resentment politics, but I focus more on the suburban middle class resentment than the sort of supposed white working class.
I think it crosses class lines. I mean, part of the reason why there was a cleave in the Democratic Party, I mean, part of it was at leadership, I think there was a sense that we don't want the unions to control our political process. Part of it was also, you know, a lot of the union movement did not appreciate, the lesbos burning their bras and, the black guys walking around with shotguns.
Do you think some of that narrative is a little exaggerated?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that's a little of an oversold story, but yeah.
I don't know if that's I don't know about that either. We discussed kind of, you know, the politics around LBJ in the book. And I didn't write this part. This was my colleague Brendan wrote most of this. And he pushes back against that narrative that the hard hats, you know, the white working class of the 60s were opposed to the Great Society and they were staunchly supportive of the Vietnam War. And that's something, you know, that narrative comes about from things like the hard hat riot, you know, and they hated these lazy, dirty, unwashed hippies. But the reality of it is, and I believe polling data backs this up, a majority of working class whites were opposed to the Vietnam War as early as 67.
Right. And also not even just like literally the financial resources that poured into the civil rights movement. A lot of it came from union leadership.
Well, no, definitely came from union leadership. But, and I don't know, I'm not saying necessarily the war. I mean, I'm talking when you get into the later 60s and the early 70s, when it really became about the ERA and it became about broader emancipation, not necessarily even legal, but sort of like culturally speaking. That seems to be where you started to get the blowback. And then, you know, 6 years later, we have the Reagan Democrat. And I'm not convinced. I don't think it's associated as much with the Vietnam War, but I'm not convinced that those resentments, and I, to be honest, I don't have the polling data, so there may be a different story there. But as that goes on later, you know, the guy's telling us we got to wear a sweater and we can't.
Was there a contradiction in the 70s? Because Nixon is still, I mean, certainly by today's standards, is actually relatively, I mean, certainly far less extreme on attacking the social safety net on labor issues, right? And then Carter is already the prototype of this supposedly more like socially moderate but pretty fiscally conservative.
Yes.
And then we go to Reagan. But already at that point, you'd already had the Democratic Party really intentionally in some ways sort of saying we want to become a party of the sort of managerial class and disconnect from
unions.
Yes,
absolutely. That's what I'm saying. And, yeah. And part of the whole McGovern, right. Not McGovern Commission, but the one that, in changing the way that the primaries worked was to get it out of the back rooms with the unions and sort of like punted the union leadership a little bit. But I also think there was an effect of like 4 years where anybody associated with Republican didn't want to be Republicans. It was actually a time in this country where there was still some modicum of shame that was associated. Like it was possible for Americans to actually experience. And the Nixon thing, I mean, shamed some people. I mean, I saw it with my cousins. Like, you know, they were voting for Nixon, and then it was like there was like 2 or 3 years, whereas me as like an 8-year-old could be like, ha ha.
I like that.
And there was,
what a prototype of your career, dude.
Exactly, exactly. It was... But I don't know. I mean, and I guess it remains to be seen. All right. Well, let's look at. Speaking of. Do you want to watch a couple of clips?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Do the majority
do
report
the
thing.
Can I vape in here? Thing. Is that legal?
Sam Stein would say no, but I will say yes.
Oh, yeah. All right.
There you go.
Sam Harris would say thought experiment.
Yeah, so when did you ever smoke cigarettes?
Yeah, I did. I did for about 10 years.
Oh, good for you. And so you switched over to the
I
vape?
Did. I switched.
Is that a jewel?
It's a jewel, yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah. It's a gold jewel.
Well, no. I mean, it's a classy one. Yeah. I mean, I get that. But I just am aware of those because of apparently that's happening in junior high now. I'm not going to say anything else, but that's what's going down. And don't ask me how I know about that. All right. So, look, folks, we've talked a lot about the zero-sum game that's involved in racial and cultural resentment. And, well, we know who is on the front lines of this fight. Bill O'Reilly, of course, has left the building. He's hit the showers. Wasn't he supposed to show up on Newsmax or something like that?
I don't know. There something like the last I heard of Bill O'Reilly's, he tweeted out that he would have voted for Cortez if he was in that.
Yeah, him and Glenn Beck were shot.
Yeah, he was like, at least she cares.
She knows her community.
Yeah, she knows her community. Yeah.
They're really trying to figure out some way of like making themselves relevant again. But
wasn't that a slate take?
Yeah, Tucker Carlson has picked up the ball. He is not the type of guy who's going to go to a soul food restaurant and question why people aren't saying hey, mofo,
say, hey, motherfucker, you want chicken? What,
yes,
they didn't say that.
But he is going to show how Democrats really, this is all about electoral politics when it comes to kidnapping babies.
Republicans have always feared that immigration would change the character of American society. Democrats should reward them with their very worst nightmare. Remember that paragraph. It is the blueprint for what we're about to see. They're going to tell you it's about civil rights or some other principle they pretend to care about, but they're lying. It's about seizing power and holding it. That's their only aim. They're deadly serious about it. Well, you were grilling in the backyard last night. They were plotting, in effect, a coup.
Wait a second. Will you revise? That quote does not say that.
That's deep.
Put it back. Wait a second.
Who was that quote by?
The quote is by some...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is he like a Democratic?
No, he is a he's a professor, actually. We interviewed him a couple weeks ago.
We had him on.
You had
Ferris.
Him on, too.
Oh, Ferris. Okay. All right. I forget. All right. So...
he's the guy who's organizing the coup, Sam.
Right. Oh, Democrats. Oh, how Democrats fight dirty. Right.
Race coup.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
The race coup.
But here's the thing.
You got to stay a little more focused.
Here's the thing. The quote is, they have feared that immigration would change the character of American society. And he's simply saying, yes, we should change the character of American society. It should become more multiracial and more multicultural and diverse. It's not necessarily about a coup, is it?
It's a coup. Well, to reactionary white Americans, yes, they consider that a coup. They consider living in a majority-minority country to be akin to a coup.
Yes, and I think and concretely, like D.C. and Puerto Rican statehood is a coup.
Right, right. Yes. You don't want those folks having an actual vote and representation.
And as a background, they have been using these terms for perhaps decades now when talking about white birth rates in California and Texas.
Yeah, this is Pat Buchanan ran on this in 92.
Yes. Yep.
There's
a great Pat Buchanan quote in the book if you want me to look it up.
Oh, yeah, I would love it.
It's really fun. It's from...
What's the Death of the West that came out a couple years ago?
We talk about his 92 campaign a bit as a kind of tracing the conservative mind. And
I will say, I went on... Pat Buchanan used to have a show on MSNBC, or he filled in for Scarborough Country at night.
That sounds right, yeah.
And I would always get booked on that show because I was the only Jew he could find who would agree with him on Israel. And it was always the most disgusting feeling to walk out.
I need that Kike Cedar because we're talking about Sharon tonight.
Exactly.
I was watching this 96 documentary about the 96 election a few nights ago, and it had a lot of interesting debate footage from the Republican primary debates that you really wouldn't see anywhere else. And it was Bob Dornan. So you remember B2 Bob, yeah?
That guy ran for president?
Yes, he ran for president in 96. Wow. Yeah.
And that's the year that Buchanan won the New Hampshire primary?
Yes. Okay. Yep. He's on stage with Buchanan, and they're both, you know, just throwing red meat to the crowds. And this is Buchanan, you know, him closest to you know, getting that ring. And Dornan, I guess, is making a play for civility. He's just a sideshow here. He gets, like, nothing in these contests, but he's still sticking around the debates. And Dornan says, you know, we're Republicans. We should all, you know, we shouldn't attack each other because there have been Steve Forbes comes in with all of these fucking negative ads.
Right.
And he says, you know, I might have good disagreements with my friend Pat Buchanan about Israel as an ally. But, you know, otherwise we're still Republicans. And I cannot imagine a single Republican saying that today.
Right.
To anyone. That, you know, I have a fine disagreement with my friend about whether we should cut off aid to Israel, but it's all reasonable.
That guy hates Israel. I love it. It's great.
Here was the quote from Pat Buchanan in 1992, campaigning. I think God made all people good, but if we had to take a million immigrants in, say, Zulus next year or Englishmen and put them in Virginia, what group would be easier to assimilate and would cause less problems for the people of Virginia?
This is exactly the point that I have been making.
Well, I mean, I guess if you're talking about bringing a million immigrants in to one sort of state, assimilating a million Englishmen as opposed to Zulus would probably be easier.
Well, right, because it's a similar economic system and shared culture, obviously.
Exactly.
It's an interesting.
It's just a way to knock Zulus,
I think.
Well,
I mean, that's really, yeah. Which very it seems like an old... I don't think Zulus is a thing that exists anymore. It's not really
the Zulus. Zulus are going to come back in this type of rhetoric because you're going to see this. If South Africa does any land reform, which they absolutely need to do, and you already see this, this idea of South African whites being terrorized because there might be some land redistribution is like a major emerging alt-right talking point. And you will
see. Is it really?
It.
Is it now?
The Australian conservative minister suggested that they should offer refuge for white South Africans in Australia. It's coming. Trump will probably mention it in a couple of months.
You know, Buchanan.
I wonder how that will go over here. I would be super surprised if there was a big
It doesn't. It's not geo. Just think of white people lose their farms to black people. It doesn't matter where it is.
I just feel like that it is not. It does not resonate like the idea of no go zones in Sweden, because that.
Well, that's
I feel,
I mean, and also that's real. That's happening. So
I just feel like the apartheid fight has happened in this country.
We'll see. We'll see. I wouldn't bank on that.
All right. Well,
you should have seen. I remember the comments on Ted Cruz's Facebook post where he did a, you know, Nelson Mandela's a great guy post, and people were like, how could you? He was a communist.
let's go to you know what I wanted to do is read Scott Pruitt's resignation letter. Have you read this, Virgil?
I've skimmed it. Yeah.
You skimmed it.
Yeah.
Let me.
I'm busy.
I'm
a busy man.
You just skimmed it for.
There's a lot of material to take in.
Do you have
the music ready?
It is. Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, let's put a little music down for this, Matt, because this is pretty touching stuff, Mr. President. It's been an honor to serve you in the cabinet as administrator of the EPA. Truly, your confidence in me has blessed me personally and enabled me to advance your agenda beyond what anyone anticipated at the beginning of your administration. Pause it for 1 second. This guy can't write. Like, he can't really put a sentence together. Bless me personally?
Well, yeah, you can bless somebody impersonally.
Your courage, steadfastness, and resolute commitment to get results for the American people, both with regard to improved environmental outcomes, as well as, without any commas, historical regulatory reform, is in fact, without any commas, occurring at an unprecedented pace. And I thank you for the opportunity to serve you and the American people in helping achieve those ends.
You ever see that president of Azerbaijan account that just tweets weird things like, Azerbaijan has met all of its economic goals for the year? That's what that sounds like.
It is. It's full of platitudes, but really, really just sort of wordy for that. That is why it is
a lot of emotion.
That is why is hard for me.
Seriously?
No way.
I swear to effing God.
Wow.
Typo. You know, the problem is he can't get any assistance to do it, to look over anything he writes.
It's crunch time. He got the wife a job before the resignation kicks in.
This is making me think, like, how many of these scandals were just grammatical errors in his emails or something?
No kidding.
And I was like, I wasn't trying to get my wife a franchise.
I was trying to get her French fries.
That's a typo.
That is why is hard for me to advise you. I am stepping down as administrator of the EPA effective as of July 6. It is extremely difficult for me to cease serving you in this role. He doesn't believe in commas. First, because I count it a blessing to be serving you in any capacity, but also because of the transformative work that is occurring. Okay, I got involved.
You know who loves this email?
Years ago.
Right?
Years ago, I got involved in a 419 scam with Nigerian emailers where I kept going back and forth. And this is the way they write. Like English, like the English is a second language, and they're just like, some of it just doesn't seem to work.
Scott Pruitt relocates to Lagos.
I mean,
I was the EPA head.
What do you mean?
My wife has a bank account that you can unlock.
What do you mean you got involved with a scam? They scammed you?
No, I had.
It was a tough
time.
He wasn't getting the sitcom roles. And
no,
he,
I was waiting, actually.
Fela Kuti's son.
I was waiting on word whether or not a show was going to get picked up, and there was nothing.
And you just messed with them. You had them.
Yeah, I have 200 pages of emails where I went back and played multiple characters.
You did a funny prank where you wired the money.
I
gave them $3,000. I own them.
They wanted me to wire them $6,000, and I pretended that I was infirm and couldn't leave my apartment, but that I gave the money to the delivery boy And he, I had written on the wire transfer 6,000, but he, this other guy, had crossed out all the zeros. And so I sent them $6. But they were very upset about that.
Have you ever seen this? So there's like a whole community of people that you know, jerks around these scammers. And I hope this is real. Maybe this is all set up. But apparently, you know, you can just make outrageous demands and maybe they'll go to lengths to fulfill it. And one time they got these scammers to recreate the Monty Python dead parrot skits. And they did it. And you can look up this video. You can see this video. And it's amazing. They did a great job.
No, they did
of
it
redoing
well.
It. They,
yes,
they knew
they did
that.
It well. No, they actually had some talent.
All right, music.
Oh my gosh, this is still going on.
But also because of the transformative work that is occurring. However, the unrelenting attacks on me personally, my family, are unprecedented and have taken a sizable toll on all of us. My desire in service to you has always been to bless you as you make important decisions for the American people. I believe you are serving as president today because of God's providence. Incidentally, folks, there's only one type of providence. It's God's providence.
There's the one in Rhode Island.
There's the one in Rhode Island, too. I believe that same providence brought me into your service. I pray as I served you that I have blessed you and enabled you to effectively lead the American people. Thank you again, Mr. President. There's no commas. He doesn't use commas in any instance here. For the honor of serving you, and I wish you Godspeed in all that you put your hand to. Your faithful friend, Scott Pruitt.
Yeah, the one that matters is me. I'm the only one that matters.
Nice.
That's clutch drop there.
This completely changes my perspective on just like, well, I thought Scott Pruitt was a sharp guy,
yes, right,
who would come in, and he is a raging idiot.
Right. Yeah. We thought that Scott Pruitt was like, there's the total morons, there's the Betsy DeVos, and then there's like the ruthless destroyers of all of the infrastructure of federal government. And Scott Pruitt's the guy. And yes, he is.
I always thought he was a Betsy DeVos type because this was news to me. Somebody told me the other day that he's actually like an evangelical guy. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I didn't know
well,
that either.
I didn't
either.
Know that either, yeah. And I thought he was just a rich guy who wanted a cabinet position because he made out, he manufactured all of that, all this, you know, chintzy shit with the EPA logo on it.
Right.
So for his trophy case or something, I thought he was just basically like Trump, just a fucking rich guy who wanted
wasn't
to
he the
gild
Attorney
the
General of Oklahoma, though?
He was the Attorney General
I thought that the reputation he had there was that this is a guy who coordinates closely with oil and gas to
everything
to
that he did was that, literally written for him by lobbyists.
Right. But I mean, I guess that actually, right. Maybe. That doesn't require intelligence to go to the most powerful, you know, companies in the country and just say, hey, write your own legislation you want and I'll muscle it through.
Yeah, maybe all and these people are just avatars for powerful interests.
His relationship with money was all through Harold Hamm, who was a billionaire fracker.
He's the Oklahoma boss.
But it's funny because when I see those making all the accoutrements you're talking about, I see someone who did not come from money, but really thought he was. I didn't realize he was a Jesus juice guy, but that reminds me of like the, you know, folks I've seen in the comedy world who got a little taste of success and were like, now it's all mine. Like, it's all mine now. Like, I got the fourth role in an independent movie, and it's like, where's my fucking trailer? That type of thing.
you know what it is? It's Ben Carson with all that weird crap he has in his house.
Yes.
All those weird portraits.
You mean like the
it's all
good. Like winning?
There's something going on with, like, evangelicals, I think, that is, they're they must see their leadership living sort of these incredibly wealthy lifestyles.
The only thing that's going on is cash money. But no, he's actually, Ben Carson's not an evangelical. He's a Seventh Day. It's a whole other thing. That's a whole other ball game. I don't know what the hell's going on. We got to figure out what the hell's going on.
A lot of these radical strains of Christian heresies in America are, you know, they're just selfish ideologies when it comes down to it. I mean, and you read that in that Pruitt letter. It's. I mean, I had this discussion with friends, and we couldn't figure out whether he's sincere about all the religious aspects of that, or he's just trying to cover his ass. And what we decided on was, well, you know, it's both, because it's really indistinguishable, because so much of this religion is about making excuses for your bad behavior.
Resetting the clock with your imaginary friends.
Right, instead of actual atonement or penance.
Right.
Right. A lot of blessing going on, though, in there. He was blessed. He hopes that Trump is blessed. There's a lot of blessing that's happening there. Let's, Alan Dershowitz. Let's listen to Alan Dershowitz. Could these guys be better matched?
No.
I mean, could these guys.
This isn't a powerful Jew Goy crossover here.
Yeah, they see this because really look at Tucker's face in this. The audience can see he's emotionless.
All right, let's listen to Alan Dershowitz punished. He's being punished, ladies and gentlemen, for defending Trump amid the Russia probe. This is Alan Dershowitz being punished.
I am making the same arguments about civil liberties I've made for 50 years and that I would be making if Hillary Clinton had been elected president and people were trying to impeach her. But at a, you know, people talk about parties as if that's something serious. I don't care about
parties. Pause it for 1 second. Just like Tucker Carlson has maintained that exact same stare now, like throughout this entire thing.
Yep.
Grieved, confused puppy.
I wonder if he's like.
Have you seen the Al Roker freeze up? There's these famous freeze-ups of, like, anchors, and they just stare, and I think it's probably just a producer's talking in their ear, but people online isolate them and say it's, like, MK Ultra or something.
Okay.
We'll talk about parties as if that's something serious. I don't care about parties. I'm invited to too many. But at a party this week in Martha's Vineyard, a woman said, if Dershowitz were here tonight, I'd stab him through the heart.
Nice.
This is a Martha's Vineyard woman saying she would stab me through the
heart.
Pause
it. Wait a second.
Wait,
what's
Martha's,
that supposed
Martha's
to mean?
Vineyard getting serious. I like it.
Wait a second. That's not. Nice. What is that supposed to mean? It's a Martha's Vineyard
she
woman.
Was not a Schwarza, and she's saying she'll stab me.
Wow.
I think that's right.
I just can't believe that.
I don't care about parties.
That Alan Dershowitz thinks that this is what is he? What is
I buy that this is about him selling his book?
You think that's what it is?
Yeah.
What is the name of the book?
Oh, I don't know. I can look that up.
Do we need to
plug it?
Yeah,
it's called The Chapel Guide to Revolution: A Manifesto Against Logic, Facts, and Reason.
Have you guys gone out on some type of like? Have you contemplated going out on some type of media tour where you talk about how you're not like you know people are being angry towards you or mean towards you?
Have we contemplated doing that? I mean, yeah, why do you think I'm here?
Do you have a specific complaint?
People are very unfair to us. They're very unfair to Felix when he doesn't get a win in Fortnite. And
is he playing Fortnite?
He is playing Fortnite, yes, on the Twitch stream.
Oh, you guys have your own specific Twitch stream?
Yeah, we just started one, soft launched it a few weeks ago, and it's mostly just Felix and his friends right now.
Wow. That's the dream, isn't it?
For
Sam,
him,
we can do that for you.
That's the dream.
If you want to get a Twitch stream going.
You should Twitch stream. You should get in on this.
I do want to get in on it. Mile is doing Fortnite. I have it on my phone now, but apparently on the phone is people look down on that a little.
You're
going
to want a controller and the big TV.
I know. But then what's the point? I won't be able to play with my daughter on the It's really bad.
Trade-offs.
It's really bad. It's really bad around the house. Let's go to what is this anti-ICE protester? Does this have to do with Jim Jordan, or is this separate?
The woman on the Statue of Liberty. Climbed the Statue of Liberty.
I'm confused about what number five is.
That's just from yesterday.
Okay. Is that a Jim Jordan thing, or is that nothing? Okay, sorry. All right, well, here is, I don't know if people saw that a woman climbed
yesterday.
Up. What's that?
I played this yesterday, the woman scaling Statue of, not this sound, but people will know.
Okay, so Teresa Okumau climbed the Statue of Liberty. Well, it wasn't clear to me how she did that. She's got to be a good climber.
Yeah, I saw a ladder there, but I wasn't sure if that was the...
That was their ladder. That was the cops' ladder. She's 44, immigrant from the Democratic Republic of Congo, living and working in Staten Island. That in and of itself, they should have... she should have gotten... I mean, that is not...
Props.
But yeah, props indeed. She climbed up the Statue of Liberty. And of course, this is outrageous that a protester would do this. What was that clip?
That was her going to be saying that we have Tucker talking about it.
Oh, okay. Let's hear from her talking about why she did what she did.
Our beloved First Lady that I care so much about said, when they go low, we go high. And I went as high as I could.
Okumu told police she climbed the base of the landmark to protest the separation of immigrant families who crossed the U.S. border illegally.
I think the message was sent. No child belongs in a cage.
Okumu is an immigrant from the Democratic Republic of the...
Congo.
The Congo.
She's from the DRC. And I believe Tucker had some thoughts about where she came from.
Yes, Tucker Carlson does not appreciate someone coming from the DRC. I'll let him say it.
Meanwhile, signs of growing extremism in this country on the left are everywhere.
Pause it. Just yesterday. Growing extremism. Someone, a woman climbed up on the Statue of Liberty.
And quoted Michelle Obama.
I just remind you that when Tucker was a young boy, I think it was in the mid-80s, we had, was it the mid-70s, 85, was it 1975, 85 bombings in this country. 85 bombings.
This isn't exactly the Weatherman bombing the Pentagon.
No, but if not quite.
You listen to David Gergen, this is the most violent it's ever been.
This is the most violent it's ever been.
Extremism in this country on the left are everywhere. Just yesterday, a Congolese immigrant shut down the Statue of Liberty, our Statue of Liberty, to protest the Trump administration's immigration policy.
Pause it. Hold on for one second. Does he have his own Statue of Liberty? Like, is he talking
the
about Swenson foxes?
The Swenson family. Yeah.
Congolese love our statue.
Congolese took our statue, Mom.
Shut down our Statue of Liberty. The Daily News article about this, really buried really deep in it, was... they're talking about the reactions to the protests from the tourists there, and most people are very supportive of it because there's another anti-ICE event, but which she was a member of, but she went on her own accord to go up the statue. And there's one family that got really pissed off, and I don't think it was a direct quote from them, but I'm just rolling this around in my head, and I'm thinking, what kind of goofy-ass family goes to the Statue of Liberty, one of the worst touristy places to get into, on the 4th of July?
Right.
Like, does this family, you know, wake up and do the pledge every morning?
Right. And it's literally like going, I don't know, it would be like deciding to go to Times Square to watch the ball drop, but doing it like, let's go down there at about 10:30.
Oh, it's so awesome.
There's no inconvenience to this.
Yeah, right. I want to go at the most convenient time.
No, it's not even I want to go see the ball drop. It's like, I want to, let's go finally have that drink at the Times Square Marriott hotel lobby bar that we wanted to go for.
Can we get reservations for the Olive Garden?
That's pretty good.
All right, let's
cold ahead to Apple.
Our Statue of Liberty.
You used to be able to go inside the statue, right, before 9/11?
Yes, and they were redoing it. I don't know if you can. Can you not go inside it anymore?
I don't think you can.
Have no idea.
They were redoing part of it, I think.
Ask that family.
All right.
Yeah.
The Statue of Liberty, our Statue of Liberty, to protest the Trump administration's immigration policies. The left applauded that. But take three steps back and think about what you're watching right here. Congo is a war-ravaged hellscape, a country noted for mass rape and cannibalism. Imagine escaping...
No, that's...
Wait. I only took three steps back. I think I'm going to need to take five steps back to get a sense of this. Go back. Rewind this
a
little bit.
Cannibalism.
Right here. Congo is a war-ravaged hellscape, a country noted for mass rape and cannibalism. Imagine escaping a country like that and being welcomed in our country, the United States. You'd be grateful, wouldn't you? Many Congolese are grateful. This person is not grateful at all. She took over one of our monuments to scream about how racist we are, and progressives support her. They have gone insane.
Right. I support her for calling out how racist we are. And
do you think that no one in his audience goes, well, wait a second, maybe she's just realizes how horrible it is to come from a situation like that and why we should have sympathy for other people coming from a similar situation?
Maybe, but I could tell you something I definitely don't think. Should I double check that cannibalism claim?
Right.
Yeah, probably.
Hell no. Of course.
Is it widespread cannibalism still? They still have that?
No, yeah, widespread, absolutely. Yeah. It goes back to the, it was cut when we supported the coup that put Mobutu in power and we killed Lumumba. We cut down on it a little bit, but now it's just been chaos for a long time.
The DRC, that's where we get all our rare earth minerals,
the
right?
DRC is why we have these things. We fuel every single side of a perpetual civil war, which literally did start in 1997, I think, when Mobutu finally died, who we put in power in like the late 60s. After we helped kill Patrice Lumumba.
Are there...
And then they just started eating each other.
Are there
really weird.
Human flesh... are there human flesh
you know,
pieces?
That would be the most... If somebody actually presented me with evidence that there was widespread cannibalism in Congo, I would say, it's like, is this part of the new iOS operating system? Because that actually would make some rational sense.
The conservative trope where they're upset that people aren't grateful and... that gratefulness makes them agree with them is really funny to me. Like, I
gratefulness is submission.
You should be grateful, by which I mean you should also have our opinion on
right.
these things. I remember listening to a National Review podcast like years ago and had more of an appetite for these things. And they were really upset about a John Oliver segment about like wealth or something like that. And basically being like, you've won. What are you complaining about? You have all this money. How could you possibly be against this system? They could not understand it.
That is amazing when like conservatives get even more upset by it. They're like, well, at least like, you know, poor people who just need to be run over by cars when they're not doing double shifts at Walmart, at least they have the excuse of being losers. You have a TV show and you're expressing human empathy and concern. That's disgusting.
All right, let's take a quick break, head into the fun half.
We have a Jimmy Reefer kick.
Oh, we do. Virgil, would you mind sticking around a little bit? We're going to take some phone calls.
Okay, who are the callers?
We'll find
out. That's exactly how we feel.
We'll find out.
Going into every fun half.
But first, every week, almost every week, for quite some time, one of our longtime listeners, Jimmy Reefer Cake, sends us a song that encapsulates the week in news. And he has recently decided that they're all going to be Doors parodies, or I should say covers. Doors covers that he has reworked.
Yeah,
and
right,
what is today? Are we still doing this?
I don't know the Doors catalog very well, but I know this song title here is People Are Strange.
Yes, that is actually a Doors. I don't even think that's a change. I think that is actually literally a Doors song.
People are strange when you're a fascist. Faces look ugly depending on skin tone. Immigrants seem wicked when they're unwanted in your redneck fascist town. When they're strange, depends from what country they came. When they're strange, no legal ID with a name. When they're strange, when they're strange, when they're strange, yeah. All right, yeah, Trump is an asshole, but so was Obama. Hypocrite, just let them in. And they will work hard, pay extra taxes. I don't give a fuck if their skin is brown. When you're strange, make America great again. When you're strange, I say just let them all in. When they're strange, when they're strange, when they're strange. Strange.
All right, there we go. That's very nice. I really do miss the instrumentation, though, from that song, but didn't mention weed in there once today.
No.
That was
very odd.
Very strange. I hope he's okay.
Off of the core brand.
Folks, just a reminder that you can support this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. It's a way of saying thank you. We give you extra content every day. Again, if you don't have the resources, but you want the extra content, please send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And we will hook you up. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Folks, today is Friday. The TMBS was a special Independence Day TMBS, right?
Sure, precisely.
What did you talk about? How great America is?
Always. And I was like, why is this Congolese woman here climbing her statues?
Well, that actually happened the day.
I anticipated it. So wow. I'm actually Tucker stealing someone may material have been in from on the this. Michael Brooks show. So it's a problem. Bree Joy was in studio. We talked about how Cortez won. I did a segment on John Oliver and comparing AMLO to Trump. This Sunday, illicit history.
Jake
for
Flores
patrons.
Was also in.
Jake Flores was also in. We talked about his the ICE story and more. He's a really funny guy.
Oh, he's great.
He's really. He talked about this clown who's also does serious journalism in Mexico. He's like a mashup of Jon Stewart and Julian Assange. We're going to see if we can get him on. On this Sunday, Derek Davidson and I, for patrons, have done an illicit history on working backwards from Mike Pence's claim in Brazil that America has always respected Latin America's borders and that they should do the same to us. So we've worked that backwards, going back to Teddy Roosevelt's corollary policy through the good neighbor policy.
I think it's just a question of what you mean today. By respect, right?
That's like, exactly it. I mean, that's a great point. That's really, a great point. What do you mean by respect?
Very broad, a lot of different ways in which you can
We want respect. You to prosper.
When we go into the fun half, are we going to hear from Jamie?
Oh, yes.
With Jamie, who is at the Socialist Conference. You can check out The Antifada at patreon.com/TheAntifada. And, of course, are you dropping a new literary hangover this weekend?
Yep, Sleepy Hollow tomorrow comes out. It's a charming tale of a school teacher that the community decides they can kill him and... keep it or hush it up.
I didn't realize that's what Sleepy Hollow is.
That's
about.
The subtext.
Off to school tears. That's interesting.
Yep.
Oh, and also, we are the food bucket challenges inside the horizon for TMBS, which is scary, but it's not that far away.
All right, folks, quick break. Head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. We'll be right back.